Now, I'd like to turn to a painting by Edward Matthew Ward. It represents the last parting of Marie Antoinette and her son. This picture was a sensational success at the Royal Academy Exhibition of 1856. It was singled out for lengthy comment by most of the journals. One critic claimed never to have seen a more deeply moving picture. We don't always find it so easy nowadays to enter into the spirit of Victorian pictures like this, which offer recreations of famous historical events. Of course, for the Victorian audience, they have the same fascination as the carefully researched costume drama would have for us now in the cinema. But in the 19th century, there was a tendency to envisage history not so much through the eye of a movie camera, as we do now, but as if it was being acted on stage. This tends to make the pictures look to us more contrived than we're used to, but actually they're just using the convention of their time. Ward was no less concerned than would be the present-day movie director to present his scene convincingly, and he did his research. So, as we know, he consulted a book by a French historian, Alcide de Beauchesne, which had just appeared in English translation in 1853, under the title Louis XVII, His Life, His Suffering, His Death. The book tells the tragic story of the boy, Marie Antoinette's son, who would have been Louis XVII, but who disappeared in suspicious circumstances just 2 years after the events represented in Ward's painting. During the French Revolution, the Queen and the rest of the royal family were imprisoned in the Tower of the Temple in Paris, and it's in this dungeon-like room that we see them in the painting. The Queen is in black because her husband, Louis XVI, has been guillotined just 6 months earlier, and we see her here on the worst day of her life so far, the day when her son was taken from her. The date is the 3rd of July, 1793. It was late evening, and at first the child was asleep. His bed is in the background, and has a curtain which, as Beauchesne tells us, was ingeniously improvised by his mother so the candlelight wouldn't disturb him. The Queen is accompanied by her sister-in-law, Madame Elisabeth, and her daughter, Marie-Thérèse. She's been mending clothes, or making her best effort as a novice sempstress to mend clothes, while Marie-Thérèse read out articles from a big historical dictionary. Suddenly, in Beauchesne's words, the tread of many feet sounded on the staircase. The locks and bolts were moved, the door opened, and six municipals made their way into the room. "We are come," said one of them brutally, "to acquaint you with an order from the committee." So, the 8-year-old uncrowned king, it seemed, was to be separated from his family. At first, the women were utterly distraught and tried to prevent the officials getting to the bed. But force was used, and this explains the upturned chair in the foreground, and eventually they capitulated. Then they dressed the child in clothes damp with tears, and so we come to the moment chosen by Ward, again in Beauchesne's words. "At length, the Queen, concentrating all her remaining strength in her heart's core, sat down upon a chair, drew her son before her, laid her two hands on his little shoulders, and calm, motionless, and composed in her distress, without shedding a tear or heaving a sigh, said to him, in a sad and solemn tone, 'My child, we are about to part. Remember your duty when I am no longer present to remind you of it. Never forget the good God who tries your faith, nor your mother who loves you. Be good, patient, and straightforward, and your father will bless you from heaven above.' Saying these words, she kissed her son on the forehead and gave him in charge to his jailers." Ward had first exhibited a painting of the French royal family imprisoned in the Temple in 1851. And of course, this was only 3 years after a great wave of revolutions had swept Europe in 1848. And yet, in spite of severe economic depression in the 1840s, which brought with it great social unrest, England had somehow managed to escape a revolution. The topic was obviously a sensitive one, though, not least with the young Queen Victoria, crowned in 1837, at the age of 18. It can hardly have escaped the Queen's notice that Marie Antoinette's fate was to become even more gruesome. Not more than a month after the episode represented in Ward's painting, she was transferred to the dungeons of the Conciergerie. On the 14th of October 1793, she was subjected to a mockery of a trial in which her own son testified, as he'd been coached to do, that she had sexually abused him. 2 days later, she was guillotined. The critics were deeply impressed by Ward's painting. They liked particularly the group on the left, the six men who seemed to represent the full cross-section of revolutionary officialdom, variously officious, brutish, and in one case more humane. There wasn't much negative criticism, but one point was made, which amused me. This was that the Queen's Spaniel would not have behaved in such a frivolous manner in the circumstances. He ought to have been shown either consoling his mistress or growling at the men. But all this shows us is that the art critic of the Examiner knew nothing about the difference in moral fibre between French and English dogs.